From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And it's time for our reporter roundtable, where we talk about stories that have been making headlines across Illinois. Today we're focusing on the twin cities of Bloomington Normal and the not twin cities of Rockford and DeKalb, but they are served by the same public radio station, which is why they are linked in our minds and hearts. Joining us now to talk about all of that is Peter Medlin, who is education reporter for WNIJ, Northern Public Radio, serving Rockford and DeKalb and points in between. He's also host of the Teachers Lounge podcast. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Yes, linked in our hearts, and definitely. But yes, always good to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us to talk about the actual Twin Cities of Bloomington Normal is Eric Stock, who is news director at WGLT, Bloomington Normal Public Radio. Eric, welcome back to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be here.
And Eric, I want to start with you, and on a more serious note, with talk about a couple of public safety stories. The killing, the shooting death of Sonia Massey in Springfield has left many people questioning policing hiring practices in their own cities, and that is including in Bloomington Normal. This was the subject of a meeting recently at the Bloomington Public Library. Tell us more about what happened there.
Yeah, so the city of Bloomington has a civilian board that reviews police complaints, and occasionally we'll talk about bigger policy issues about law enforcement. And of course, they saw the Sonia Massey killing as a good time to have a conversation about police hiring and training. There were four local police chiefs who addressed the public on this. Steve Petrilli, who is the police chief in Normal, says that they look not just into where their police officer applicants have worked, but also where they've applied. And they figure if this applicant is not selected by another department, there's usually a good reason why. And I guess that tells you how thin the hiring pool is and how easily it can be to get hired by these departments. Now, the police chiefs say it's still difficult to fill a lot of these vacancies. They attribute negative public perception as the main reason why, though Bloomington's police chief, Jamal Symington, said that sentiment seems to be changing toward a more positive tone for police. And the officers did say that all of their officers do de-escalation training, but really it's not clear what these departments are doing is any different from what the police agencies who hired Sean Grayson is, the officer who faces murder charges in Massey's killing. They all said they couldn't speak to that case, of course, so it's not real clear what those discrepancies are. And I will mention one commenter raised a point during the forum about where the officers live. This came from Linda Foster from the Bloomington Normal NAACP. She said in places where officers don't live in the community where they work, they may feel less invested in improving their community. Those were a few of the highlights.
Interesting. Well, on the subject of policing and trying to build trust between the community and police, one of the things that police want to do is live by the rules that they have to enforce. And we saw an episode, or you saw an episode recently, where the Normal police chief was involved with some trouble at the Bloomington airport. Say more about that.
Yeah, this happened at Central Illinois Regional Airport. The police chief, who we just alluded to, Steve Petrilli, was flying on a personal trip, and he went through the pre-check screening, which coincidentally he just recently upgraded to, apparently. And sure enough, his gun, which was still loaded, was in his travel bag. Guns are allowed, but any ammunition has to be stored separately, and it must also be announced to TSA staff ahead of time. It seems the chief simply forgot that he had it there. He described this in a meeting with reporters yesterday. He said his heart went into his stomach when he realized it. He knew it was a mistake. He's also try to use this as a teachable moment to his staff to indicate, hey, if you're traveling, have a plan, be mindful of this. But he owned up to it. The sheriff's office here took the gun. They gave him the option to take it back to his car, or they'll store it for him at the airport. And that's what they did in this case. Now, the TSA does say that guns at the airport are a serious matter. You can get fined up to $15,000, depending on the circumstances. Presumably, a uniformed officer having a weapon is going to be treated a little bit differently. The TSA apparently told him he was going to get off with a warning, though he may lose his pre-check privileges for a little bit.
Hmm. All right, Peter Medlin, I want to bring you into the conversation now and shift over to talk about some education stories. There was a recent state report that found children living in northern Illinois struggle to find providers for mental and behavioral health care. What's going on there?
Yeah, so this is a report from a state organization, Birth to Five, and they essentially have regional task forces all across the state that for the last little over a year have been putting out reports like this one, analyzing early childhood needs across the state. And kind of the headline here is that we do not have adequate services with the needs of the community. And again, this is focusing on mental and behavioral health in this specific report. So psychologists and folks who do early intervention services, who do home visiting for kids who might have developmental delays. It's just not enough mental health providers in general, from clinics to in schools or in hospitals. And you know, one of the things that we come across is that it's not just one spot. Like, you think about this entire process of trying to seek out services for your child, and there's just so many different roadblocks that families run into where, you know, the ideal is that, you know, you're young child is struggling, needs mental health support like a psychologist. You know, you talk with your pediatrician, you get the referral, you get the support, simple. It's not how it happens. Like, there's so many steps in the process where they lose families, where you could spend months just trying to get a referral, months on a wait list to see a provider, the nearest therapist if you live in a very rural community, say in Carroll or Joe Davies County in Northwest Illinois, could be an hour or two away to get to the nearest therapist. If you have, you know, maybe Medicare, your insurance might not cover it. Or once you finally see someone, then they run into situations where, because there are not enough providers, there's high turnover and burnout is common. So as soon as you finally get that therapist that you connect with, and then they quit, and then you have to start the process all over again. And that's what we heard from folks talking about this.
Bureaucratic nightmare, it sounds like. All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are beginning, as we do most Fridays, with our reporter roundtable, talking about what has been making news in different parts of Illinois. Today, focusing on Northern Illinois with Peter Medlin, who's an education reporter at WNIJ, Northern Public Radio, and in Central Illinois, in Bloomington Normal, where Eric Stock is news director at WGLT. And Peter, I'm going to stick with you and move up a level to higher education. There's an Illinois state senator who says she's going to introduce legislation that would change how the state funds higher education. Say more about that.
Yeah, so there's been a state commission the past few years looking at how to create what they call a data-driven approach to funding public universities. So right now with Illinois higher ed, there kind of is no formula. It's kind of like the state looks at what the university's got the previous year, and then public university presidents kind of go down to Springfield to make their case about what they should get. And then at the end of the day, all of the public universities get a flat increase or a flat decrease. And so people like Northern Illinois University President Lisa Freeman, who is a part of this task force, says that that's kind of an unfair system because the schools are really different. Some have larger endowments than others, and some serve low-income students. And so they want a formula that weighs in all that those considerations, similar to what the state does for K through 12 education, which actually that same senator, Kimberly Lightford, was also a part of that process of changing that funding formula for K through 12 back in 2017.
Yeah, so I guess more of a, what they call an evidence-based formula. I suppose I should disclose that all of us work for public radio stations that are part of these universities, and so this, I guess, in some way affects us, the U of I for me, Northern for you, Peter, and Illinois State for Eric, but something that I'm sure we'll spend some time debating in Springfield when lawmakers are back in session. Eric, let's stick with higher education and questions of money in a slightly different way. Illinois State is feeling the effects of a recent settlement with regards to the NCAA and student compensation. How's that affecting things at ISU?
Yeah, of course, so money fuels everything in regards to college sports. So this big settlement involved former Division I athletes called House versus NCAA. It stems from athletes' desires to be compensated, which until recently they could not. The deal isn't approved yet, but it's expected to be in the neighborhood of $2.8 billion with a B dollars. Now, that money essentially is going to come from Division I schools. Illinois State sponsors the most sports in the Missouri Valley Conference, more than Southern Illinois University, more than Bradley, et cetera. So they're going to take the biggest hit in the league. And ISU's interim athletics director, Jerry Beggs, estimates the university will lose about $5 million in revenue over the next decade. And now there are big-time college coaches that make that kind of money, but not so much here. And this comes at a time when they're still trying to figure out name, image, and likeness rules and all the dollars that are going to student athletes now. College administrators have generally said they support all that, but you also get a sense of unease about what this means for their sports programs long term, specifically for mid-majors that don't get the kind of television revenue that the larger schools get. And one more thing about the sentiment, it also caps the number of student athletes in each sports team. So the trade-off is colleges can now give full scholarships to every one of these athletes. And what it means is colleges like ISU will have to trim their rosters at some point. ISU right now is 50 over that cap, which means they would have to bring in fewer student athletes in the future. And larger schools will be able to offer full scholarships to more athletes, and smaller schools really can't do that.
Well, Peter, let's move on, and we've got a little less than 5 minutes remaining in our time together. I want to talk about a couple of automotive industry stories, and I will begin in Northern Illinois. Union workers are pretty frustrated with Stellantis, and for those, just to remind people, this is the company that used to be known as Fiat Chrysler, and so Stellantis was. It's basically delaying the opening of a plant in Belvidere. This is something that had previously attracted the attention of President Biden, who paid a visit for this. It's currently sitting idle still. What's going on there?
Yeah, so like you said, last fall, President Biden came to Belvidere to visit these United Auto Workers along with UAW President Sean Fain, and they were really celebrating this new contract that they signed after a stand-up strike with the big three automakers. And they secured a set of, like, nearly $5 billion to reopen the plant and invest in the community. And now, just last week, Sean Fain came back. As you mentioned, they're really upset that Stellantis is delaying this, and Stellantis is claiming that they are allowed to do that because of things like market conditions. They have seen a big sales slide this year, but UAW and Sean Fain say that it's not due to market conditions because other major automakers are not seeing those same sales declines. And they also point to things like the CEO of Stellantis just received a 56% pay increase that brings his salary up to almost $40 million a year. And so they see it as more of a corporate greed issue. And they say that they're not, they hope that they don't have to strike. That's not the goal, but that they will if they have to.
Eric, there was also an automotive story in your area at the Rivian plant in Normal. Recently, there was a fire there. What do we know about that so far?
Not a lot, unfortunately. So this broke out last Saturday night. We understand it didn't impact the plant itself, just some of the electric vehicles outside. We don't even have a firm number on that. We've heard it was in the 50s. Rivian has declined to comment on any of this. They say they're still looking into the cause, but it's not the first fire that Rivian has had. We've counted at least four that we have reported on since the spring. Most of them were pretty minor. This was the largest one, but this is a strain on town of Normal resources. The plant is on the far west side of town, not particularly easy to get there quickly. The fire department says it's about 7.5 minutes on average, and they also respond to a lot of medical calls there too. And the plant is massive, not easy to get around. It's more than 1 million square feet, and it also has just been approved for a major addition to the site. The fire department says they still treat the fires to electric cars and the lithium-ion batteries in much the same way they would a conventional fire. They just need a lot more water to cool those batteries.
Interesting. Something I would imagine as we continue to electrify our vehicles, more fire departments are going to have to be figuring out how to adapt to those circumstances. All right, Peter, last question. We've just got about a minute left. Rockford is welcoming a major new business to the area, long awaited. What's the story there?
Yes, new Hard Rock Casino just opened yesterday in Rockford. Over 1,000 slot machines and table games. It's got a live venue that seats 2,000 people, and I got to see JB Pritzker smash a guitar at the opening yesterday.
And we got to mention Rick Nielsen is also involved, the Cheap Trick front man.
Yes, he's a Rockford native, so he's been a big public face to try to get this project over the finish line the past 5 years or so.
Excellent. All right. Peter Medlin with WNIJ, Eric Stock with WGLT. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st show. Stay with us.